Before we get started on the Bengals Beat podcast, I wanted to let you know that we are now brought to you by 50 West Brewery. They have award-winning beers coupled with a bike shop, canoe and kayak library, volleyball leagues, running groups, and a killer food menu. At 50 West, they pride themselves on adding value to people's lives through beer. Is there a better way to add value to people's lives than through beer? Whether you're looking to take a float down the river and end with a beer or throw back a couple and play some volleyball, 50 West is unlike any other brewery you've ever seen. Check out their website at 50westbrew.com. That's F-I-F-T-Y, westbrew.com for more information. 50 West, where every beer's a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Weiner Jr. invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewing Company. Jim, how are we doing?
Good, good. The off season is almost upon us. You know,
I know.
Like Marv's back, and
Marv's back,
and the staff's filling out, and we'll be into mock draft season soon.
We're not in mock draft season yet. It is not time yet. You know, mock drafts came up in a recent meeting that we had, and it's like people just everywhere trying to test me.
Yeah.
People trying to test me, but I get it. I get it. But look, we're going to be in Mobile soon, so I mean, we're obviously already going to be thinking draft. It's not only – we're only like 2 weeks away from a trip to beautiful Mobile, Alabama.
That's true. It is true. And then that's where we'll learn all about senior linemen who can go number 12 overall.
Oh.
And Baker Mayfield, Paul. Baker Mayfield.
Baker, the touchdown maker. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. This is good. Yeah, there's nothing better than talking senior offensive linemen's technique in January. That's just – boy, it gets the blood pumping, doesn't it?
It does.
Hey, yeah.
You know what? You gotta know, especially if you got new O-line coach. I mean, this is exciting stuff.
It is. Can we talk about the actual real exciting stuff that's happening?
Maybe.
All right. Let's try. So when we last left you on the Bengals Beat podcast, the Bengals had just re-upped – with Marvin Lewis for 2 years, and we sort of did the emergency BBP that night, and the fallout from that was yet another delightful press conference in the same vein of the 2011 just mess that happened of a press conference that still lives in lore. This was not quite that. This was not quite as bad. There was no Mike Brown.
No.
And Marv sort of came out trying to be on his game rather than trying to be a depressed citizen.
He did.
So I think we got – well, let me just say that it lasted 40 minutes. A question came from Betty Lou at the Newport Gold Star at one point.
Yeah, it did.
We had like fan question off the Facebook page thing. And it was just kind of a big show.
Yeah.
What was your biggest takeaway from 40 minutes with Marv? And also Bill Lazor, of course, was up there too, retained his OC.
Yeah, poor Bill Lazor. Like, he didn't get his moment in the sun. No, my biggest takeaway was Marvin saying, I was hired in 03 to do a job to win a Super Bowl. I'm back in 2018 to win a Super Bowl in 2018 and sort of doubling down on that sort of original message. I mean, we've joked about Marvin 3.0. We've talked about a reboot in 11. And to hear the coach take it all the way back and say, no, this is where we're starting from. And then that he had to be on the same page as Mike in that regard, that Mike needed to know that Marvin still wanted to do that, still had the fire to do that, whatever you want to call it. And then Marvin wanted to hear from Mike, like, this is what we want, Super Bowl in 2018, or are you looking at, you know, another 2 years of rebuilding and losing games and probably switching a quarterback and all, you know what I mean? So I think for me, there were some other individual points we'll get to later, but I think that general tone of a championship, of a Super Bowl, was interesting. And it sets us up all year long, Paul, because to me, that sets the that sets the base. All right? That's where they set it, Super Bowl. So yeah, that's the prism that this team needs to be covered, in my perspective. And all of their decisions or lack of decisions or whatever need to be made in 2018.
Yeah. I think my takeaway was, for all the circus that this sort of was, I mean, every stinking media member in town, all the news people showed up, people were trying to ask the tough questions, and that's all fine and good. Like, this is the time, this is the place, let's all get it out. And for everybody getting it out, and for all that it was long and diving into serious organizational issues, and Marv sort of with his feet to the fire, it was just the same old stuff we've ever heard, in my opinion. I came away from that, and it sounded like every Marv end of the year presser. Like, it was just, you know, we got to be better. We're going to try to do this better. We're going to try to do this better, and we got to be different, and we're going to You know, I mean, I don't know what we're supposed to take from that, where we're, you know, feeling like this is anything different. It sounded, and so besides the like hubbub surrounding it and some of the more challenging issues we were discussing, it sounded like the same old stuff. And I think that's what people have a problem with, you know, is please let this at least sound different. But to me, it didn't. To me, it didn't really sound that different.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. I mean, my point of reference started with these guys in 2015. You know, in 2016, that group talked Super Bowl, you know, and that was a fair thing to say after a 12-4 season. Andy's back. You know, yeah, people are gone, but, you know, we can keep it rolling. So that for me, I guess, was what was new. But you're right, though. I mean, there were a lot of points and areas that did sound like we've heard before. I guess the difference is maybe Marvin was less – I mean, he tried to back him. He told Doc he writes sucky articles, you know. You know what I mean? I mean, there were a couple moments in there where I think Marv wanted to tell Betty Lou from the Gold Star to go, like, jump in the river. So there were some moments where I think that was kind of held in check, but you could see, hey, 18 years. Oh my God, I almost killed Bengals fans. It'll be 18 years when it's over. Like, we think maybe it'll be over. I guess it's hard to really change your public message. So I guess for me, I'll just stick with the thing. I guess haven't heard the head coach say so emphatically, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, you know, so it sets off your standard firestorm of rage and anger. And you know, I'm kind of trying to go through that this week. I'll get to that later in the podcast. We're going to get to this staff, which is starting to reset and getting much closer. OC and DC and special teams coordinator all locked in. Bill Lazor back, going to stick around, hold on, remove the interim title, and hold on as offensive coordinator. They signed Terrell Austin, the defensive coordinator of the Lions from the last 4 years, who's been on nine head coaching interviews over the last 3 years during his time with Detroit. He admits a lot of those are Rooney Rule related, probably, and he doesn't know how many. He questioned last year how many of those were legitimate. But he's been a pretty hot prospect, a pretty nice get for the Bengals. We'll get into Terrell Austin in a little bit, and then Darren Simmons retained as coordinator. Some back, some new pieces on the staff. Still some yet to fill out, including the big change at offensive line with Paul Alexander out. And then we'll get into the gripes that you guys all have, the series that I've been doing this week on sort of the top five things that make people mad about Marv and Mike, and diving into how real or not real some of those should be. Most of them are very real, but some of them also have sort of become caricatures of what they once were. So kind of just trying to nip that in the bud before we go forward. So we're going to get into that. A little bit later. We're going to power rank coffee, which I know you're excited to do because I think you always have like a running list of judging the best and worst coffees everywhere. So we'll make sure we get to that. We'll talk about why we're mad and happy also. I want to dive into one thing that we can spin forward out of what Marv did say that was maybe new a little bit, and it was in regard – to free agency and the Bengals being more active in free agency. So here's a little bit of Marvin Lewis talking about being different and what maybe they need to be different in doing. So here's Marvin Lewis from his press conference this past week.
Marvin, did you believe that ownership here is in business to win a championship?
Oh, I think no doubt in my mind that that's what Mike Brown, that's his goal, is to be world champions. And I think, we spent the last 2 days spending time, three or four times through those days, talking about what we felt like were the things where we needed to get better, why and what and how. And I think that's the only thing the man thinks about is having a championship organization.
After the last 15 years of not being able to get there, what makes you believe that year 16 or 17 will be different?
Well, I'm not going to worry about 17.
16.
And, that's the thing. I have to go in and make it different. That's all. You know what I mean? You're talking about a nebulous situation. But that's my job and that's my goal, is to make it better and give us the opportunity. First off, it's to get back at top of this division and then move forward through that.
How can you be different? Do you need to change the way you do things in order to make it different?
Oh, I think as coaches, we change continually. But we have to be better. We have to be better. I have to be better than I've been, obviously. We have to put together a staff that will be, and our players, as I told them when I stood in front of them Monday morning, that regardless of who was standing in front of them when they got back together, they had to be ready to be a better football team. Internally, each of them, they had to be ready to press themselves to do more, be better, and regardless of who was standing in front of that room when they got back together, and that was going to be important.
Marvin, you must have won something in this negotiation over the last few days, other than a raise, I'm assuming. Can you articulate at all with any specificity what it is that you won, what sort of concessions that you got that made this job workable again?
Paul, I didn't, I don't think I went into it thinking I was trying to win anything. This is a partnership, and I've been entrusted to do a job, and they believe in me. I think they had to come out of the meetings with me and felt like, number one, I wanted to do the job, and number two, I would get the job done for them. And I think that was important because that's why all you are here today. You want to know that I can get this job for them because you guys want to keep working just like I do. I don't want to sit here and look at you guys. You know, I'd rather be talking about something more important than this. And I think that's important. So I think that there was no win or lose that way. Other than the fact that the group of men, coaches and players alike, that I want to help lead them to a championship.
So what are you going to change to get that job done?
I can't tell you. we have to change. I've gone through it. We need to be better at what we do. And, you know, we're going to have changes in our staff. We're going to have to gain some better players. We're going to have to look to augment what we do with what we have right now on the football team. And maybe we're going to have to do a little better and do a better job of maybe adding some guys from other clubs. And so because we have to, and then we have to look at that as we go into the draft and make sure, you know, if this the draft isn't strong in this area, then make sure we take care of it prior to the draft. And I think that's important as well. So, you know, I think those are the things. And I again, at the end of the day, it comes down to us coaching better and our players going out and playing better. When they run onto that field and they leave that boundary of what they get done out on the field and understanding the competitiveness of it.
So being more active in free agency is something that you just got?
Well, I don't know that it means being more active. I don't know how many we added last year, but make sure if we can't add someone that helps, we add them.
So there it is. And I don't know how much we read into it. You know, are they suddenly going to be the Giants dropping $200 million to revamp the defense? I mean, you know, no. I think a lot of this is situational as well, and a lot of this is reactionary to not being active enough last year, particularly on the offensive line. What did you make? Did you make anything of this comment? Do you feel like it was a change in philosophy, or what did you think of the free agency stuff?
Yeah, I thought that was you know, the most interesting, maybe because Marvin didn't want to tell us anything about what was going to be different and then realized like he kind of had to say something. And while we do, I think rightfully kind of rib Marvin for his manner with us, I don't believe that he says things, you know, just to lie about it, put it that way. So I think it's probably something he truly believes. And I'm sure it was something that was discussed. So I guess time will tell. March will tell us more. But that was the most interesting thing, was like, okay, you know, pro personnel could be an issue. And we've talked about it. We've written about Duke Tobin's staff. And while fans on one hand like to say Mike Brown is cheap, that's why the scouting staff is so small. Actually, and this kind of teases your point, your series later, that's actually not the case. Duke Tobin, if Duke Tobin wanted to hire three more people, he could. It's just that Duke currently likes this setup. However, maybe a pro personnel side is more needed. And maybe that's what Marvin's trying to say, is like, hey, you know, look at our recent track record of pro signings. Haven't really been that great. Haven't really helped us win games. So I thought that was very interesting. And you know, aside from the Super Bowl proclamation, probably the most interesting thing to track, I guess, going into March.
Yeah, and there's situational stuff in here with this, and you know, I'm going to try not to bore people, so I will go through this quickly. And I know, I'm sorry, Bengals fans. I know you hate this. I know you hate this so much, but each offseason is different for different reasons, and there's a strategy and a formula to everything. Last year, they were not going to go and sign a bunch of free agents that would cancel out Kevin Zeitler and Andrew Whitworth. Once you knew you're losing those guys, they're not going to go and sign somebody that would cancel those guys out and jeopardize losing a third or a fifth round pick to sign a blah free agent.
Right.
And so they, because you want to keep those comp picks and rack those up, you know, so they will have an extra three and an extra five this year, and maybe even a couple of lower picks. This year, because their free agents aren't very good, they will be more active in free agency because they are willing to go. They don't care if they're canceling out whatever the hell they, you know, Russell Bodine or even Tyler Eifert or whoever would get, with whatever that would garner in a comp pick would not really be worth it. It'd be more worth it to go out and actually be aggressive towards a free agent or two. They took the same philosophy the last time they didn't have great free agents, and that was the year they brought back Michael Johnson, and they were much more active in free agency that year. I would expect this to be the same type of offseason. And so when you know, we may see a difference this year, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there's a philosophical change that Marv has gotten through.
Right.
I think it could just mean that situationally, this offseason is ripe for free agency to be a method of fixing some things and acquiring new talent. And I think that, you know, with where you look at the areas they would most likely do that, offensive line, right, obviously first and foremost, it makes the most sense, right, to do it through free agency because they need help now.
Right.
They don't need to bring in another rookie and hope that it works. They need somebody they can bring in that can help instantly.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it too. So I'm confident in saying that they will be more active in free agency this year. It won't be some huge superstar thing, but I do think they'll be more active and aggressive in that nature. But I'm also not necessarily confident that will mean that there's some sort of change of philosophy.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's all proper to keep things in perspective. You know, I mean, changes, if you will, are probably, you know, within a scope of a small box. I mean, Terrell Austin is a change because Mike Zimmer's defense has been here since 2008, but it's not like, you know, they're going to run, I don't know, what's like some crazy style defense, like a wide nine or some weird kind of thing. Like, yeah, you're right, Paul. They can maybe say, hey, look, we signed, you know, tackle Y and guard B or YZ or whatever. And it looks good, but you're right. Like, there's really no, you know, in the coming year when there's some other free agents like Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins and what have you, it's like, well, they're not spending that money because if those guys go, you're not risking that third. So, I think that is a good way to frame that, you know,
yeah,
where I think it's measured change. But they better do it, though. I mean, let's be honest. Look, the draft has been bad. They've drafted 8 offensive linemen since 2013. Since then, Russell Bodine is the best of the bunch. And so that's a lot of draft capital. That's one of the reasons Paul Alexander's not here anymore.
Yes.
You can't draft 8 players in the last 5 years, and the best guy you have is Russell Bodine, who they will be more than likely to say, thanks for 4 years, see you later. So, yeah. You know what I mean? So you have to now pay for those mistakes. And I think, you know, if Marvin is sitting up there again, banging on the table about, you know, convincing everyone to win a Super Bowl, well, sorry, you can't roll in with Christian Westerman and Alex Redmond and those tackles, you know.
You know, I would be very intrigued by the free agent center market, a position where you want a guy who knows the league, who understands what's happening in front of him, who's proven and be an upgrade from Russell Bodine. I mean, to me, that's a great place to start in free agency. You know, I'm not saying go get Alex Mack, but look at the difference Alex Mack made in Atlanta. And, you know, that's, to me, a great place to start, where a veteran makes much more sense than a rookie because it's such a cerebral position. It can unite everybody. And you can maybe, you know, you can be a little bit more, maybe a small free agent piece and some high draft capital in the tackle position, and you feel better. But so anyway, to me, I think, not to get too much into free agency, but I do think that offensive line is where they have to start, and I think center is probably a good place to go, and then throw that onto your new offensive line coach.
Right.
Segue.
Right.
So let's talk staff. Let's just dive into what has happened in sort of a wild weekend. We talked about this the last couple of weeks, in last week in particular. If 03 was the culture reboot and 11 was the roster gutting reboot, this is the coaching staff reboot. Right. Now, a lot have come back, but when you change, when you essentially change both your, I mean, Laser is staying,
right?
But he's a change. You bring in a new defensive coordinator. You're going to have a new wide receiver, a new offensive line coach that's been here forever. We don't know what's going on yet with DB. You could have some new DB coaches. It's a lot of changeover happening on this staff. Let's start with Laser. You know, they bring him back. I think there was a lot of thought that there was progress. And people go, what? Yeah. No, they finished like in the 30s. I mean, they were still bad and they got away from the run. And, you know, I contend, and I was pushing those stats out there toward the end of the year. He found a way to get the running game going the last six games of the season. Yeah. He found a way to get Andy Dalton out of his own head like he was those first few weeks. He found a way to get pass protection to not be a complete soul-crushing liability like it was the first half of the season. Those are really the three things that were put on his plate.
Right.
And now the offense still was not super dynamic, but by the end of the season – they were starting to move the ball against some good defenses and do some things.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Marvin, it was funny, basically threw Kenny under the bus one last time in that press conference by saying, you know, basically we wasted a bunch of snaps and a bunch of time with this. Kent, you know, Bill had to run this playbook. And, you know, so it's just we'll be curious to see what kind of offense Bill Lazor runs. He did it once in Miami, but he cautioned to say, well, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that that's what I'll do here, because he was fired in Miami, and you would like to think a guy grows. His background spans from the West Coast and Mike Holmgren to Eric Coryell with Joe Gibbs to whatever Chip Kelly was doing in Philly, whatever you want to call that, to a mishmash of some of it under Ken Zampezi the last year and a half. So you're right. He was working through a lot of stuff, and I'm curious to see. I think your point's exactly right, Paul. To me, he got the quarterback and the top running backs in positions to succeed that we saw results from. I'm now curious to see what happens with the receivers. James Urban is now gone. He went to Baltimore to be the quarterback's coach. Bob Bicknell, a guy who worked with Lazor for 1 year in Philadelphia, is now the receiver's coach. I'm curious to see what happens with getting receivers open outside of AJ Green, because that still wasn't fixed. That was still a huge issue.
Yeah. Bob Bicknell is an interesting addition to this that I do want to talk about. But first, I do want to bring in some of Bill Lazor addressing some of the points that you were just making and talking a little bit about going forward in his view. Because we haven't really – with all the Marv thing and chaos, we haven't really gotten too much into the football aspect. So this is kind of a little bit into the football aspect of Bill Lazor. So here's you with Bill Lazor the other day.
Can you elaborate a little more, just because in there – I don't think it allowed for that. When you mentioned Andy wants to be great, mm-hmm. and maybe making him uncomfortable can help him get there, was that in the context of your offense is going to be different than the Jay Hugh Ken line of things?
It was more in the context of how do you coach a player? Okay. You're a teacher. And okay. So you got to take a guy in part of what you do.
Is that me? That was me. Okay.
Part of what you do to make a guy better is push him past his limits.
Right.
I mean, if you're always practicing what Andy does well, then Andy will continue to be what he is. If I in an individual period or in practice put him in a tough situation that pushes his limits of what he thinks he can do, he's got a chance to become a better player. And I guess that was just a general philosophy.
Okay. Were you able
some
to do
players?
That? I mean, were you able to do that with him, or did you kind of have kind of a hands off because you were kind of a you know, were you able to push him?
I will be able to push him. I will be able to push him.
But you're not pushing him, yeah, I guess.
And I expect him to be open to the challenge.
Yeah. I imagine you...
I thought he answered your question. Without.
As someone who had options or could have had options, sure. Is he one of the reasons or a big reason why you wanted to come back here?
I think you look at who the head coach is, right. And you have a relationship with the head coach that you think you can work with him, that you can communicate, especially as the coordinator. You've got to be able to go in each other's office and very quickly, I need to know what the head coach is looking for, because then I can take it. You know, so I thought who the head coach is, what he believes in, and your ability to communicate with him. When you look at the players, you got to start with the quarterback. When you're in the position I'm in, right. You got to start with the quarterback. can he be successful? He's proven he can be successful. Okay, and then are there other pieces around the offense that have proven that, yes, there are here. They've proven they can be successful. If I didn't think, I'm probably different now than I was five, certainly 10 years ago in my career, in that 15 years ago, you're trying to get to the next big thing, become this level coach, or can you ever make it to the NFL? Or now, I've done a lot of those things. What's really important to me now is who am I with and the opportunity to win. Because I can always go up and down, in and out of all these different organizations, but at some point, you want your legacy in coaching to be that winning a championship. And because we're all human and life's short, you want to do it with people you enjoy being with.
Right.
And so to me, who are you doing it with? You have a chance to win. And so I very quickly, these couple of days, decided that, yes, I could do that here. Yeah. Get both those things checked off here. Yeah.
Quarterback's coach.
Okay, so there is Bill Lazor. Let's talk briefly about the Bob Bignell hire with James Urban moving on. You know, he's a guy that's been in sought after. Urban is. I mean, for a few years was blocked here. People wanted him. He's made pretty clear he wants to be an offensive coordinator. He's been successful almost everywhere he's been, and so you he's going to go on and be a quarterback's coach, because you pretty much got to be a quarterback's coach on your next way up if you're going to be an OC. He was a quarterback's coach in Philly, so he's going to get back into that again. A nice move for him. Bob Bignell, one interesting thing. You mentioned he was with Lazor in Philly. A lot of people, and it is very true, the John Ross – Deshaun Jackson comparison is obvious. You know, it's clear. They're basically believed to be the same type of guy. The Bengals hope they'll be the same type of guy. Deshaun Jackson had the best year of his career by far in his one season with Bob Bignell. Now, to say a wide receiver coach is going to really make a difference where it's like he's the key, I don't know. But if you're looking at what is very important and what is on the plate of whoever takes that job, it's getting John Ross being the man.
Right.
And so to have a guy that Deshaun Jackson had 1,300 yards, 9 touchdowns in his 1 year with him, and then he ended up bolting for Washington after that. Man, if he can apply the same principles that he saw out of Deshaun Jackson, he helped get out of Deshaun Jackson to John Ross, I got to feel like that's a big part of this hire.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, and that's it is interesting. I mean, Bob Bicknell's a guy we'll get to know here in a little while. Hopefully we'll get audio from him once we get to meet this full staff. But you're right. I mean, look, Deshaun Jackson is the most – as you said, there's a comp there. He's actually good friends with John Ross. Part of that, though, and we'd be remiss to not say this. Deshaun Jackson and Bob Bicknell had a very public on the sideline shouting match during a game. That wasn't always the best relationship. Now we know Deshaun Jackson is a person who, can be considered volatile at times. And maybe Bengals fans are listening to this right now. Like, wait a minute, there's a Bengals coach that might yell and scream at somebody, and they might like that. Right. But some history coaching O-line, some history coaching tight ends. But you're right. I think this goes back to that year in Philadelphia, that relationship via Chip Kelly, and being able to use those receivers and sort of that quick up-tempo passing game that gets guys in space. And before the John Ross train literally broke down, one of the things James Urban talked most about wasn't the 4-2 down the field. It was the horizontal speed, right, Paul? That wiggle, that ability to get him the ball within this little window, let him make a move. Obviously, we never saw that, but if there's anything you can kind of like project forward and like, what will Bill Lazor do with these guys? What could work? Maybe that's an element we'll see, is that it's not just a deep ball, but it's getting John Ross a chance to shine catch and run style like Deshaun Jackson did you know, under Chip Kelly and Bob Bignell.
Yeah, we'll be able to have a lot more on the staff, and when we meet these guys, I think the senior bowlers, a good chance we'll come across a lot of them, and hopefully have more for you from them as we get going into the off season and they start coming around. Elsewhere on offense, Jonathan Hayes back at tight end, Kyle Kasky back at running backs, and offensive line still open.
Yep.
So we will see what comes of that. As the time we record, though, they have not hired anybody yet. There's reports out there, but as you know, with reports, until you hear it from us, you probably shouldn't believe it. And so we don't know who that's going to be just yet. We shall see. Anthony Munoz was out putting his recommendations out there, though.
Yeah.
Because the report about who it could be is literally the guy who brought him up, 74-year-old Jim McNally.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. I can't really speak to that. I don't know what I mean, Jim's been around. I mean, you know, in case Bengals fans didn't know this, I mean, Jim McNally, he's come to at least the last three training camps I've been to. He's he was with the Bengals actually on the road at times this year, which I remember wondering if that was strange. I checked around and like, no, actually Jim has showed up at various road games over the years. Clearly still interested in coaching or helping or whatever, but in terms of like getting in it and doing it every day, all day. And, you know, I think the biggest takeaway from anything McNally related would be, and from what I understand the Bengals and Bill Lazor want, is a more aggressive style of line play. Now, what does that mean? It's hard to say. I mean, Paul Alexander invented the vertical pass set, you know, that whole like drop back 6 yards, catch the pass rusher in your chest, keep him away from the quarterback. We saw Andrew Whitworth and Willie Anderson do it so well for so long. I don't know if this is like what aggressive means, if it's like Anthony's talk about like a more, you know, punchy in the face style. But I guess that's what we can take from this, right? Is maybe, you know, if Paul A's style didn't work, maybe the natural correction is to go this other way, with using the strength of your guys, or if there's going to be that pulling style or trap style, it's not 9 yards down the sideline or down the line of scrimmage. Yeah. Maybe it's just like within a 3 yard window. You know what I mean? And you get guys turned upfield quicker.
Yeah. We will see what comes of that. That position sits open, so we'll see how it fills out. But that, you know, it's really one of the most notable exits on this staff. So to see what happens of it will be a big deal, because there's going to be a whole lot of eyes on that position group needing to reinvent itself and be better. All right, what you've all been waiting for here. Let's talk about Terrell Austin, the defensive coordinator hire. So Austin spent the last four seasons with the Detroit Lions. He came on hot, had a huge first year. Detroit's defense was fantastic. And then their numbers dipped down as his other 3 years unfolded. And so that causes some, they ended up 27th in the league in defense. Right. A lot of it was placed on personnel there, them not really feeding him the same type of talented players that he had, and just – not really being able to get the new guys, whoever they brought in, up. It just wasn't the same level of talent. But really well respected as a communicator. He's been around. He won a Super Bowl with the Ravens as a DBs coach the year they made the run and beat the Niners. You know, he's been on staffs as an assistant earlier in his career that went to the Super Bowl, the Seattle team that went to the Super Bowl back in 2006. He was on their staff. He's been around, he's been around and, you know, 9 head coach interviews over the last 3 years. He's just a guy that people really like. It seems to me, as far as filling a defensive coordinator position goes, this was about as good as they could do with Paul Gunther moving on to Oakland.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you – I think you're – the last part you said there, Paul, head coaching interviews, and Terrell, I'm sure when he meets with us, won't be shy in saying he thinks maybe some of it was for show under the Rooney Rule. But, hey, you still got that experience. you know, his own brief dalliance with Oakland, reportedly, in terms of maybe being brought to John Gruden's staff as like an assistant head coaching type of candidate. He fits the unlike the position coaches of like Jacob Birney coming back on the D-line or Jim Haslett coming back at linebackers, this fits the Marvin kind of, okay, you're hiring a coordinator who's going to be a head coach. Like, and say, and Bill Lazor fits in that category too. I know people seem a little iffy about him because he's been here a couple years. Bill, I'll tell you right now, I mean, there are people in the Bengals building who feel he will be a head coach. There are people in the league who feel Bill will be a head coach. So I think this is Marvin kind of going back to coordinators who are Austin for sure fast tracked. And you know, and now his style, he's 4-3. And you're right. I think when you look at that guy and where he wants to get to, I'm really curious to see him change things from the Zimmer style. I mean, it's been 10 years since Mike Zimmer was hired, right? And yeah. Paul Gunther carried that on. Some may argue softened it up a little bit with some cover two and some less, you know, pressure look. So I'm really fascinated to see Terrell Austin come in here. And what does he do with Geno? What does he do with Carlos Dunlap? And what does he do with Vontaze Burfict and William Jackson? Like, you've got four guys. No doubt he looked at those four, Paul, and was like, I'm sure he told Marvin A, B, C, D, and E with these dudes. So I'm really curious to see what that's about.
Yeah, I mean, those guys you mentioned are more talent than he's had in Detroit the last two right. years. And there's, you know, you're right. I mean, we'll see what that means venturing away, you know, and I'm sure there'll be some retention of a lot of the stuff that was part of the system, whether you're talking about the Zimmer Gunther system is now NFL system. You know, it's like saying, well, the spread offense, well, yeah, the spread offense is everywhere. So you can't really – there's not really a lot of people that don't do that type of stuff. I'm sure some of it will stay. But you're right. Really interesting to see how he will change things up. But, I mean, you – but, yeah. But I'm just saying what you get is you get a guy who is, I think, a top-end hire. I mean, as far as how good of a hire you could do at DC, I think they got – as good as they probably could have done. And to get a guy who really wants to be a head coach, I'm sure there's a lot of draw on that for him. I mean, how could you not want to come to a place where coordinators that do well here have consistently gone right. on to become head coaching candidates or be in the conversation for right. head coaching?
Yeah, without a doubt. Definitely, Paul. Especially like, you know, people kind of knock Paul Gunther and just was like, oh, is that really a loss and whatever. Look, Paul Gunther is getting a 4-year deal for what reportedly $12 million to go to. You know, I don't think John Gruden is jumping back into this league with Paul Gunther if he didn't think that dude could help him win a bunch of games.
Yeah, that's head coach money, people.
Exactly. So you're right. So I'm sure Terrell Austin looked at that too. Like, okay, well, all these head coaches have come out, Hugh, Jay, VJ, and yeah, maybe Paul Gunther's not a head coach, but he's getting paid like it. and he's probably going to be asked yeah. to do a lot there. So, yeah, man, it's interesting. I was curious about this with Marvin to see what would happen with this position, especially because he made such a quick decision on offensive coordinator, you know?
Yeah. You know what this kind of reminds me of, you know, these are the hires Marv has been right. good at lately. Going into his connections, right. going outside of the box of sort of people that have been around and finding somebody. That's how he got Gruden. It's how he got right. Zimmer. Both, maybe his two best hires were like this. Were guys that he needed to go outside and bring somebody new that was a quality assistant in, and he went and he knew who it was and found them and it worked out. They can only hope that Terrell Austin will be as productive as those two coaches were, particularly early in their tenure. So I think if there's a positive thing that you're looking for as a Bengal fan, I would be really intrigued by the nature of how Marvin went about this. And if you compare that to recent hires that he's made, it's been similar to some of his
right,
best ones.
Right, yeah. And, you know, we'll see on the back end. You know, I know people are kind of curious about the fact that the decisions to bring Jim Haslett and Jacob Birney back before Austin was hired is interesting, right? Because that's a chance for a guy to fill out the staff on his own. In the secondary, we don't quite know. I do believe, Paul, that the Bengals really like Rob Lemingston. I mean, we wrote several times over the course of this year that Rob is sort of primed for more responsibilities in the secondary. I'd be shocked if he's allowed to leave as well. Not quite sure about Kevin Coyle, but Terrell Austin's not taking this job if he's not feeling good about those guys, or that he could work with them.
No doubt.
So to keep that in mind, and also keep in mind 2016 when Haslett and Birney and when all those guys came in, how long it took that Bengals defense to figure it out. And what did we hear week in, week out? Oh, well, new coaching styles. We got to get used to them. So at least if your coordinator voice changes, the players who you thought had some success under their position group coaches, that voice is the same. So it's not a complete sort of tear down, shake up. And I think that's why, offensively, maybe Kyle Kasky. Hey, look, he's been Giovanni's coach for a long time. He was a guy, that Joe Mixon really connected with early. You put a big investment in Joe Mixon. So, if Bill Lazor's hiring new receivers coach, new quarterback coach, why not keep part of your room the same, new O-line coach? I mean, I can understand wanting to keep that continuity. So, it'll be interesting. I mean, it'll be really – training camp should be fun to watch in that regard if you're into that type of thing.
yeah, absolutely. I want to briefly – we're getting a little later in time here. I want to touch on the gripes.
Yeah.
I don't want – I dive really deep into these in the series this week, so I don't want to spend a ton of time here on the podcast talking about it, but quickly talking. But before I do that, who doesn't gripe is Optimistic Bobby. And so if you don't want to hear griping and you just want to hear all the positive stuff, you can go out to 50 West. Of course, 50 West still our favorites. They're our sponsor of everything we do here. Optimistic Bobby is our guy. I wanted to let you know, they have a big event. If you haven't checked it out, these things always sell out. I don't think I've missed but one of them. They're incredible. They do these brewers brunches. They're pairings between beer and food. It's a three-course brunch meal. They're doing this next one with Oscar Blues because they were one of the first ones to can craft beer to can beer, and they're canning beer for the first time at 50 West. So it's with Oscar Blues, a three-course brunch for $45. You get a beer, a can of beer when you show up. You get 2 5-ounce beers with every one of your three courses in the brunch, and you get to roll out with a six pack of your choosing, all for $45. And the food is incredible. It's a whole big culinary fiesta. So make sure you check it out. Again, you just go to 50westbrew.com and you can try to hook up the Brewers Brunch there January 28th. It's $45 a person. You don't want to miss it. Get in there now. They sell out. I will be there. I guarantee you that. So you can come say hi to me and listen to all the optimistic rantings of Optimistic Bobby. Just want to make sure to remind everybody about that. Let's gripes. So the thing was, as everybody's been so mad about the Marv Mike Brown thing, I just felt like, I want to put all these together and cut through what's true and what's not, because there's just the caricatures of themselves that Mike and Marv have become, with Mike being Mr. Burns, very just cheap and surly and just trying to make money and not caring about people and all that stuff. And Marv being like big dumb deer in the headlights guy on the sidelines. They've been created into these caricatures. Now, a lot of this is founded in truth, 100%. Absolutely. And some of it is not. So I wanted to put it all together in a spot where it's like, okay, here's what's real and here's what's not before we go forward just complaining about this whole offseason. I went through some of it. I think some of the stuff's interesting. I went through halftime adjustments because people love halftime adjustments. And you call whatever you want to. Like Marv once called it journalistic jargon.
Yeah, where famously. That's one I remember.
Yes. It's hard to forget. But I mean, you know, whatever you want to call it, making too many adjustments, too few adjustments, not making any, had this halftime really long enough to even make any, whatever it is, they've not been very good in the second half of his entire career. And the numbers show that. If you go to the story, you can see it. But I thought it was interesting. He, over the 15 years, he ranks 23rd out of 32 teams in holding on to halftime leads. Yeah. Okay, if over that course time, the Steelers ranked third. If he would have held on to halftime leads at the same rate the Steelers have over the same time period, that would have been 17 more wins over the course of 15 years. You know what a win a year would be? That'd be a pretty big difference in how Marvin Lewis is viewed in the number of division titles and playoff appearances he would have. Yeah. I can tell you that much. If you added a win a year. So that's like, you know, that's very real. That's very real.
Yeah.
But then when you get into arguments about cheapness, right. You know, that's maybe not as real. I don't know. Is there one that you hear a lot that resonates with you, that you have an understanding with fans and you feel their pain, or also the opposite of where you feel is maybe the biggest misconception of the ones you hear?
They all come in rapid fire. You know what I mean? Like, as you said, halftime, cheapness, lack of discipline and accountability, you know, all that stuff, Paul. Like I don't know if I hear one more than the other. I do think the cheap one is the most off base. Like, I can roll with you about halftime adjustments, as we talked about. I can roll with you if you want to get into discipline and accountability, because look, hired in 03 to win a Super Bowl, it's been 15 years. Where's the accountability? Dude's still here. Like, if you want to start there and go down the line, like, okay. You know what I mean? You know, discipline. Mm-hmm. And I think people mean something else when they say that other than just like flags thrown. I'm not going to get into that, but I'll just leave it there. But I can roll with that. Like, you know, people want to cite penalties or suspensions and all that stuff. Okay, that's fine. But the cheapness thing is something that I think is born out of the 90s, has stuck around. It's rooted in the stadium deal. Sure, could they spend more money? Could Mike, you know, decide to buy up half of Covington and put a bubble over there? Sure. You know, sure. But the players and you know, what do you want? Like, Andy Dalton is a $97 million quarterback. AJ Green's a $75 million wide receiver. Like, do you view the Bengals differently if AJ Green went away, but they spent $81 million on Julio Jones as a UFA? You know what I mean? So I just, like, the way they spend money is just so lost in the cloud of the 90s and you know, no indoor facility because Carson said it once. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, no doubt. Well, yeah, that's why I wanted to make sure to point out that, you know, their weight room and all those facilities are loved by players. Their new cafeteria and everything they've done there has been loved by players. And the amount of money that they've spent has been top 10. Via the way the CBA defined spending money as a team. The CBA came out and said, this is how we define spend, because there's so much fake money out there. There's so much dead money and like cutting guys to not actually pay that. And so you can say, oh, in 5 years, $89 million, when actuality it ends up being like $8 million, you know, that you actually pay. cash over cap is how the NFL and NFLPA defined real money. And over that, they were ninth in cash. They spent 102% of the salary cap over the four-year window. That was the first four-year window of the CBA. That's you can debate, but they let Whitworth go. Yeah, they shouldn't have done that, right? Maybe they shouldn't have signed Drake or Patrick. Everybody everywhere debates and can hindsight where they should and shouldn't have spent money. But to say cheap infers not willing to spend money. And you can debate philosophy, but to say cheap does not debate philosophy. It debates willingness to spend. And maybe there's some areas the bubble thing will always hang over their head. And there's things that – but it is – to me, I'm with you. I think that is one of the unfair ones that gets shot at the Bengals that doesn't really reflect where they're currently at. People like the idea of Mike Brown being a cheap old man that doesn't care about winning, when in actuality, it's the opposite. Maybe they're ill-founded in their philosophy and how in some of the moves they make, but it's not because they're cheap and it's not because they don't care.
Right.
And I think that gets lost sometimes. But there's more, so that's out there. Three more in the series. If you're listening now, series going on all week, so keep an eye on that. There's other topics that I attempt to care. Some of them are just very hard to quantify. Like, you can try, but some of them, the gripes that are out there are very much subjective, and that's kind of where you get into issues where the teams and Marvin and Mike Brown see things one way and fans see them very differently. All right, speaking of gripes, let's get into our power rankings. Just because it's the offseason doesn't mean we're going to stop. Power rankings are still stupid, even though it's the offseason, so we will continue to power rank stupid things. But, you know, in fairness, coffee is not stupid, Jim. No. It's very important.
It is arguably one of the most important things in my life.
I would agree. As someone who has to deal with you when you have not had it or you've had a bad cup of it for some reason, I can say that it might be the most important thing in your life. It's the most important thing in your life for my life. I know that much. so let's do it. Let's do top two, bottom two. Coffee. Let's start with top two. What's your top two?
So my number two, I am, and you can find it. It's a Hawaiian blend, Kona Coffee. I don't know, there's something about it. I'm not a big fan of bitterness or the super strong bean, if you will. For some reason, Kona is. I don't know. It's a spot. It's a nice, it's a nice bean, if you will. And it's just, it's
nice
a good bean.
You need a good bean.
And I don't think it's that bitter. So, it works for me. So I think if you're out there looking around, you're like, oh, I need to find some coffee. Try that one. Because you can find it. Yeah. It's Hawaiian. Very good.
Okay. My number two, I'm going to guess is your number one, but I don't know for sure. I don't know where you're going to go. Dunkin' is just – it's so solid. It's consistent. I like their styrofoam cup. I like how it doesn't burn your mouth immediately when you get it. It tastes good. Don't get the hazelnut from there. They screw up the hazelnut. However, just your standard – coffee at Dunkin' Donuts is my number two. Now, I don't know. Is that your number one?
Clearly my number one. I will drive out of my way to go get one. Bengals fans get mad about the team practicing at the UC bubble. I don't get mad because there's a Dunkin' Donuts right there. I'll go to the bubble. I will go there. I volunteer because there's a Dunkin' Donuts right there. Dunkin' Donuts not far from your house, although it's got kind of some crappy drive-through hours. Yeah, I'm gonna throw you out.
Oakley Dunkin' hours are ridiculous.
It's so stupid.
Ridiculous. You think people don't want coffee early in the afternoon? Like, there's literally a whole segment of the population that is like advertised to try to serve the like mid-afternoon need for energy boost, and you're not gonna be open in the drive-through. Why? Because you're connected to a Popeyes? Well, first of all, they should knock all Popeyes down to the ground, and I'm not going to talk about that. But second of all, they need to work on that. I'm talking to you, Madison, Rookwood, Oakley, yeah. Duncan.
But it is my number one, far and away.
Yeah. Okay, my number one, and we've had this argument many times on the road. We may have even talked about it on this podcast before. I love me some Waffle House coffee, boy. I love the Waffle House coffee. It is so good. It signifies everything that is right with the world. It just – I love their big mugs. It tastes good. I like sitting in a Waffle House and eating butter-soaked hash browns with that. Oh, everything about it just is my happy place in the world. So Waffle House coffee in the Waffle House. Like, I'm not going to be out like buying Waffle House coffee to do at home. But Waffle House coffee in the Waffle House, that's one for me. And I know you hate that.
Yeah, that's not good at all. Oh.
You're a Waffle House hater in general, which I hold against you.
We disagree on that.
That's your problem. That's your problem. You take the L on that. Because I guarantee you're about to get blown up. All our hardcore listeners that are still hanging in there, blow up Jim at Jim Ozarski. You know the Twitter handle. Tell him how great Waffle House is and how it's really formed your life, because you're either a Waffle House person and it makes you better, or you're like Jim and that's why you're all angry all the time. Okay, let's go bottom two. Do you have a bottom two?
So number two on the bottom, Javalia coffee. Not good. Exactly. Don't get it. Ignore it.
But what is it?
It's a coffee. I don't know what to say. Like, it's in a yellow – it's a brand. and just when you see it, just say, oh, wow, I heard that sucks, and just keep going.
I've never even seen it, but if I do, now I know what my response should be. Although I kind of want to try it just to see why you think it's so bad. Oh.
Wow, you can try it by yourself.
Yeah. All right. So here's my number two. And I'm kind of just making up the rules because I want to, and I can do whatever I want. It's our podcast. I officially have turned to hate mode. I hate single cup Keurig carafes. Let me tell you what. First of all, our Keurig machine that I got, I was all excited when I got it. I thought it was going to be really great. That thing sucks. And that thing broke down. You get like all this extra cleaning of it all the time. It's a huge pain in the butt. And when you try to do the single cup, it gives you like a half of a regular mug size. You can't even get like a real cup. So then, they make carafe size. So you have a carafe mode. So you get the carafe. Even the carafes, you need like a huge carafe just to try to fill out an actual travel mug size of the Keurig coffee. And it breaks down. So that thing is in my basement, and it's about to be thrown into my backyard into a million pieces, along with the printer that doesn't work in my office, because I'm sick of it. So I know it's not really a brand, but that's my take. That's my number two.
Number one, it might have a catchy jingle, but I do not want it in my cup, Folgers.
Yeah. No. You're going full on Folgers hate. You're taking on the king.
Yeah, no. No. It's bad.
What did Folgers do to you?
Make bad coffee. Yeah. Hey, we don't have any sponsors yet. Anyway, we don't have any sponsors yet in 2018, do we? No, okay. So
we definitely don't have one.
Well, you know, they can change my mind. But as of right now, it's my number one worst. I just can't there's nothing about it that's good. And, you know, unless it's free, and it's not free, so it's bad.
All right. My number one, it's still something that I'm a bit shook by. It's been a development that's happened in late in 2017 and rolled over into my new year that I just can't believe, because I love so many things about Chick-fil-A. And I love their breakfast. Their breakfast is phenomenal. Their little chicken biscuits, the chicken minis. Oh, they're just so good. I love everything they do for breakfast. And they're such quality chicken. And, you know, their food is just so good. How could their coffee be so wretched? How could it taste so much like just rat poison? I mean, it is truly awful. It is the worst thing. I hardly even recognize it as coffee. And so when you get so much quality breakfast product to then serve a cup of – somebody needs to step in and tell Mr. Filet, like, look, bro, you need to get your coffee thing fixed. It's like when they someone stepped in to Wendy's like 10 years ago and said, man, your fries are bad. You need new fries. And they went out and they got a fry guy. They hired a new fry guy. And he came in and they started the sea salt fry thing and they were doing better. Chick-fil-A needs a coffee overhaul. It is atrocious.
Yeah. I
had to get that off my chest.
Let it be known. I won't even, that's not a place I'd even try coffee. So I will agree with you. Just on principle. On principle.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. What are you mad?
You know, believe it or not, again, I'm kind of in a good space here. Like it's over.
Yeah.
It's over. So like I think I might have been mad, you know, yesterday. But I like right now, Paul, I'm feeling all right. I'm throwing you a curveball.
I don't know what to do with this. I hate this. I hate new Happy Jim. Yeah. Happy Jim sucks. I'm like angry Jim.
I'll be back to being angry. I think it was just.
Do I need to start doing what makes you mad? Because I mean, I basically did. I just did what makes you mad. Like I did the whole Chick-fil-A rant, and then you did like you're just a happy guy. So I guess we just covered it. It's bizarro BVP today.
That's exactly what happened. I think like, you know, Bengals fans being mad about Marv like made me happy. And it's over. Like there's coordinators. There's no you know what I'm saying? Like
coordinator's supposed to be a scribe win. Supposedly Austin is a delight for scribes, so that's huge for us. Selfishly, so for us.
Know, I'll be mad about something. I might, you know what? Someone might send me Folgers coffee this week.
They might. I hope they do. I hope they do. 312 Elm Street. Attention, Jim Ozarski. Big old bucket of Folgers. Oh. Please do that. Because I want it to come in bucket form where you have to open it and wonder if it's anthrax.
Bucket form. Oh.
All right. Well, it's been a pleasure. BBP will be back again next week. We'll have that, and then we'll be doing a Mobile, Alabama BBP, not too far in the future, which is exciting. So we'll have that for you. So anyway, thanks to everybody for listening. Reminder again: get out 50westbrew.com. You're gonna want to hook up that Brewers Brunch January 28th. Dude, $45, you can't beat that. That is, you're gonna get so drunk and have a six pack on your way home and have good food for $45. Great deal. So make sure you check that out. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening to the BBP, and we'll be back next week.